This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Half a dozen reasons why Ipswich Town still refuse to give up anytime soon on this championship title race. Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Good evening and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Following the title chasing fortunes of Ipswich Town since 2015, my name is Craig Fimbo, and this is the live flagship show brought to you every Sunday, and especially every Sunday following a bloody six open brackets, six close brackets to nil victory. Hello to everyone watching us live. Please say hello in the comments. There's a lot of people in the comments. I shall try to ping some up in very short course. If you're watching or listening after the event, good work in prolonging the basking. All we ask is, regardless of how you're watching or listening, give us a thumbs up, give us a like, give us a five-star rain or shine review. Dave, can you please define the intangible quality that is bounce back ability?
I think that was it. That was it yesterday, as defined. That Ipswich Town versus Sheffield Wednesday on the, what was it, the 16th of March, would be in the Oxford English Dictionary as the definition of bounce back ability, I think. Yeah, it was a bit odd. We're in the pub beforehand in the ground, and quite mixed. Funny enough, they do the, if you've been to the ground, they do, you, if you're not, you can see it. They post it on Twitter and stuff. They have the little blackboard as you go into the garden, and usually there's a 6-0 flying around, 4-5-6-0. Weren't any of those yesterday. It was lots of like 3-2s, 2-1, stuff like that. And the general consensus, I think, an edgy win, or it could get edgy a bit last week if we don't sort of get the early goal, get on top, could be a little bit edgy. And it turned out to be quite the opposite, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And also joining us, as you can see, is Mikey Penty-Smith, prized from his normal midweek live post-match slot, as he was able to attend in the flesh yesterday. Mikey, how is your own giddiness?
Yeah, I mean, just so... It's got past being surreal now. Like I think you said in the green room beforehand, Rich, it's just becoming the norm, isn't it? Just going to Portman Road and walking away happy with beaming smiles and so much to be positive about. And you mentioned the bounce back ability. How many times have we done that under Kieran McKenna? We have a bad result and we instantly bounce back in the next game. Not always with a win, but always with a big performance.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so there's a lot of people in the chat sort of relating to what you were saying there, Dave, about what their predictions were. As we saw in the pre-match show where Rich and Seb do their predictions, Rich himself went for a 1-1, as has been highlighted here. And there's a few people saying it would be a lot closer than as
well, it transpired. Do you remember when we were doing our predictions, I think, at the beginning of the month? I think Ben actually said Do you remember Ben at the home games? Ben, what, I don't know if you said a loss, but he said that might. Yeah. Well, I don't know if he predicted a loss. I can't remember, but he said he thought that might be. And to be fair to Ben, at that point, I think they just won three, or maybe even four on the spin. Certainly three on the spin before they played, won the fourth, and then played Leeds. So probably was a fair comment. But good God, I mean, we played well yesterday, but they were not very good.
We'll come to that in a second. At which point in proceedings they down tools, shall we say? But yeah, so let's crack on. Let's look at the teams that lined up yesterday. I shall bring up the Town team. Apologies, Mikey, for covering your face. Three changes for Town after last week's injury time disappointment in South Wales. Axel Twenzabi came in at right back for Harry Clark. Nathan Broadhead came on the left of the attacking three behind the striker in place of Jeremy Sarmiento, both of whom dropped to the bench. And Amari Hutchinson came in as a replacement for Connor Chaplin, who didn't actually even take a place in the squad, I think, for the first time this season. He was one of the knocks that was being referred to in Kieran McKenna's pre-match press conferences. Dave, your views on that lineup and the replacements?
Yeah, not surprised about Sarmiento. I think that wasn't a great surprise. I don't think he was largely ineffective against Cardiff, wasn't he? And he hasn't been as effective as a starter, really, has he? Hasn't really had that many starts. But when he has, he hasn't really pulled up many trees, so to speak. Chaplin was a surprise, really. Just completely, we got the teams through. Oh, Chaplin's rested on the bench. No, he's not even on the bench. And obviously, subsequently discover, perhaps a back problem in training this week. Twenzabi for Clark again. I don't think Clark particularly had his most greatest game against
defensively.
Cardiff. Yeah, certainly defensively. So no great. Yeah, the only great surprise there is Chaplin, and as you say, Craig, you know, not even in the squad. So clearly that was an injury, which, like I said, we found out later it was. So still. And again, you look at these teams and even with these players out, you scan the bench, and it's a ridiculously strong bench still, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that was one of the things, actually, Mikey, that when the bench did come out, you just wondered, as we're so used to, that attacking four, you know, being replaced like for like when you get to about 65, 70 minutes. And you looked at it and thought, well, maybe we're just a touch short there, potentially. But yeah, yourself, how about the lineup and maybe Hutchison himself coming in for that number 10 slot in place of Chaplin? Different sort of player, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think the common consensus has been that Amari Hutchinson is more effective off the bench. I think that might be the case when he plays out wide, but he's a different animal in that number 10 position, especially in a game like that at home. Maybe it wouldn't have suited him so much in a tighter game away from home. But yeah, it was. I mean, Luongo just seems to, now and again, he just needs a few days rest or a few days on the training ground to get back up and running. He had that illness a few weeks ago, and he never quite looked himself, did he, the last couple of games? But yeah, he was just an absolute, using this term, he was just a beast yesterday, wasn't he, Dave?
He was, but to be honest,
ball, I think, but so good driving forward on it as well.
Not being detrimental to him, I think you'd have done a half decent job in front of Luongo and Morsey yesterday. My God. But you're right, he was on a different level. But we'll get on to Morsey in a little while.
Yeah, 100% we will. Just a quick look at the Wednesday team. They had a slight change to their lineup, or certainly to their formation. Team that was beaten by Leeds last week, but previous to that had won 4 out of 4. They'd made 4 changes themselves to their lineup, including Dominic Iorfa, who came in to play right back as they switched to a back four from their usual back five. Another interesting one, I think Quincy Jones's favourite Leeds loanee, Ian Pavida, came in.
Nothing to Mikey whatsoever. lost on him completely.
Even with that pitch perfect rendition.
Honestly, with that pitch perfect rendition, whoosh.
But he looked lively, didn't he, Pavida? He was their driving force, wasn't he? And certainly in the first half for periods. Right, Dave, let's kick off proceedings, and shall we? Do you want to take us up to the first quarter of an hour or so up to and including a Vaclav Hladký goal kick?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd been reasonably even, I thought, to, you know, we're, I think we're just about, you know, what, 15 minutes, the first goal comes, we're just about perhaps wrestled territorial advantage and stuff. They broke away a couple of times into our half, I think, but, you know, with really nothing, Bannon landed on the ball a couple of times and played and played a couple of useful balls forward and stuff. But, yeah, we looked as if we were, you know, pretty much getting on top at this point. And I mean, it starts. I have to remind myself of it, but there's so many goals. I've got to remind myself about it. Yeah, it's just a really patient build up. Again, is this the goal that I think Rich said counted up 18 or something passes? I can't remember if this was the goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hutchison gets the bell. The move develops, and Hutchison gets the ball. So right side, I think right side of the penalty box, plays it inside to Morsey, who just sort of spins and plays in Twanzabi. And this is really good for Burns, because really for the first 10 minutes, Burns barely had a kick. Really, really, not say quiet, just the ball, just the build up. And we'll get on to why it was more perhaps down the left-hand side, but barely got a kick. But it was really good from Burns. It's played to Twanzabi. He knocks it. Burns is coming off the right sort of level with the edge of the penalty area. Twanzabi sort of lays it into him. It's a really clever sort of reverse pass, isn't it? He sort of reverse passes it to Hutchison. And again, this is brilliant, because you think, he sort of almost lets it run across his body, and you think he's let it run too far, but he just sort of spins and gets around it, doesn't he? And keeper's got no chance. He's unsighted, and it just flies past him at the near post. Now, you know, I know keeper near post, but he's got no chance there. He just hits it really early, doesn't he? And he is unsighted as well. But yeah, Hutchison had looked lively up to that point, but that was a real catalyst for him, I think.
Yeah, it was just bending away from him, wasn't it? As soon as he hit it, it's bending away from the goalkeeper. He didn't particularly hit it, you know, overly powerfully, but yeah, it's right in the corner, wasn't it? And it's funnily enough, someone on Twitter earlier I saw said that it was probably the only poor touch that Hutchison had all match was that first touch that led up to the opening goal.
Ironically, opened up probably the angle for him better, to be fair. But yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Just quickly here, Gary, thank you very, very much for your contribution there, my friend. That's much, much appreciated. But Mikey, yeah, there were lots of, as Dave said, there were lots of pressing. It was quite an open end-to-end match for the first 20 minutes or so. I say from that Sheffield Wednesday lineup, they weren't coming to sit back and defend. And in fact, it was a very rare Sam Morsey mistake, where he was, as ever, pushing forward and leaving people in his wake, and tried an elaborate step over about 30, 40 yards out from the Sheffield Wednesday goal, didn't it? He got nicked off him, and before we know it, it's up the other end. And now, say, our friend Pavida had a shot low to Hladký's right, which he turned around.
Good save.
But then on... Yeah, it was a good save, wasn't it? Yeah, very low down to his right.
Really good save. Wow.
But then on about 37, I think it was, Wes Burns forces a corner, but at a cost.
Yeah, so he, great burst of pace from Wes Burns. And I think he's playing really to win a corner there, isn't he? And if he can get the ball across, it's a bonus. But yeah, he gets the corner, and I don't know whether it was the process of slowing down, or maybe he slipped slightly on the AstroTurf behind the goal, but he wasn't comfortable straight away, was he? And he got back onto the pitch and laid down. Yeah, really worrying signs. And then the number comes up, and it's Caden Jackson, which feels a little bit strange, because we haven't seen him in that position for quite a long time. And you think he's quite a major drop off, isn't he? I think a lot of people would have expected maybe Amari to go out onto the right, and Jeremy Sarmiento to come in the number 10 position. But obviously, with the way that Hutchison started the game, and Jackson really being more of a like for like, they were struggling in that left back position with Burns's pace. They were going to struggle with Caden Jackson's pace. So yeah, Jackson came on. We'll speak more about him a little bit later. But yeah, it's just a pretty standard corner from Leif Davis, this one. Doesn't do anything tricky with this one. He just basically chips it into that front post area where Kiefer Moore just gets across his man. I compared it to like a John Terry header, the way he just glanced it, but with so much power on it. It was an absolute bullet header, and it comes down off the underside of the bar. It comes out, and just Cameron Burgess just wants the ball so much more than those defenders. They freeze, and Burgess just sort of throwing himself around. He possibly pushed a player in the back.
Held him down, possibly, didn't he?
Yeah. But didn't really see many complaints. Then it sort of falls near the feet of Tuan Zabian. Three Wednesday players all go for the ball and it deflects into the path of Burgess, whose eyes light up. He just sweeps it home with his weaker right foot. And yeah, after the setback of Wes Burns going off injured, we find ourselves 2-0 up. Just incredible stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Wes Burns, it happened right in front of us, as people may know. We look right across that goal line straight towards the away fans in the upper Pioneer, I shall call it, for old time's sake. And it was funny because Wes Burns sort of, he went and then checked and then went again. So I don't know whether that secondary burst of, I don't know, think about secondary bursts of pace, let alone primary bursts of pace. But he got, as you say, Mike, he sort of got the cross in and looked okay. But it's once he subsequently went off the pitch, he'd done something serious and then dragged himself back on the pitch to make sure that the game was stopped. But yeah, so looking straight at him, it looked like he knew it was a serious one, if you know what I mean. Body language and bits and pieces like that.
The way he hobbled off looked like hamstring, didn't it? And it would depend what, if it's a grade one, it's 2 weeks in it, and it goes up in, like, if it's a three like Hurst, well, that's probably at that level, it's an operation, isn't it?
Grade two at best, isn't it?
Grade two, do you think? Really? Yeah. So that's 3 weeks a month.
Well,
it's grade two at best, Dave. I've no idea.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. You want to think the way he hobbled off, it's not a grade one's just feels a bit tight. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's a shame. Obviously, he's class player. He's going to be a miss because, you know, in recent games, perhaps when Hutchison has played out wide with Bristol City comes to mind, you know, you see Burns come on, he misses directness. But so, you know, I would say, we'll get onto it in a minute, but Jackson may well have a big role to play now.
Yeah, they're more the like for like, aren't they? Whereas Hutchins more of the dribbler, taking people on, isn't he? But, and I suppose it's as well, again, this is from zero personal experience about having explosive pace off the mark. Hamstring wise, you're going to want to trust that 100% when you do come back, aren't you? Because you know, you don't want to be being a little bit tentative about that burst. Yeah. Quick one here from Callie, thank you very much, my friend. A pound for every goal. This is like some sort of sponsored event. You know, hopefully next week we'll score 10 and you can round up to a tenner for us. Thank you, thank you very, very much, Callie. Much appreciated. So just moving forward towards half time, Davis had a shot saved by Beadle. And then Dave, as we're approaching injury time of the first half, Barry Bannon's Sheffield Wednesday's Barry Bannon attempts to pull a ball out the sky and around about the centre circle, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's quite funny because last year he was doing that for fun, wouldn't he? And he'd probably flicked it up and volleyed a 40-yard pass to someone on the right wing. But not yesterday. This is just brilliant from Moore. Do you know what I compared at the time? Took advantage of power, had a spare seat. So I let my eldest have my usual seat and I sat up in Sir Alf Upper in front with my pals. And I sat, Big Jim sat there, Veronica sat dead in the row in front of me and Chris Robinson next to me. So brilliant.
That's the language, the blue language.
It was shocking, honestly. So that was superb. And I think me and Chris were sort of reminiscing. And I said, you know what, that Moore, the move where he bullies Heckway turns. I was like Paul Mariner at his best, how I remember him, you know, just sheer strength. And it's great, good awareness, but the ball from Jackson is just out of this world, really, isn't it? I mean, we've seen some brilliant ones from Wes Burns, haven't we? I mean, home match, couple of home matches ago, the Rotherham, the Keith Moore goal against Rotherham, where he absolutely hammers it. But this is even, you see this one back on the TV, and this is even better because he bends it in. I thought he puts a straight ball in. He actually bends it round Johnson, and by the way, that was a bullet we dodged, by the way. And I mean, the finish from Broadhead is just sublime, because that's not an easy finish. He's running in there at pace, and it's a half volley finish, first touch. Yeah, absolute picture goal, class goal. Every aspect of that goal was just beautiful.
Caden De Bruyne.
Honestly, that's exactly what that is. That De Bruyne.
Jesus
that,
Christ, Mikey.
Well, it is though. You nailed that, Mikey. That is that pass with pace, that curl pass with pace, which is a hard skill. Not for De Bruyne, obviously, but I'd say for
Or for you and I, Dave. But for me and
Mikey, left foot, right foot.
Okay.
I was going to compare it more to a bit of a David Beckham first time cross, but again, referring to my seated position there. It was perfect for that. And literally, I sit next to Oscar, obviously my boy, and as soon as Jackson had hit that, he screamed, what a ball. You could just see it. You could see it from our position, just curling. It was perfect. Mm. Jeffrey Boycott, corridor of uncertainty, just curling away from the keeper. And it was, a great goal and just a nice run from Broadhead as well, Mikey.
At pace, wasn't it? Absolutely bust the gut to get there.
Yeah. Exactly. But he'd had a funny old half, hadn't he, Mikey? He was sort of in and out. He'd got into the box a few times and either not made the right decision or delayed a little bit too long and got caught on the ball, hadn't he?
He's a drifter, isn't he, really, Nathan Broadhead? He drifts and flits in and out of games, but he quite often goes for the high tariff passes runs, doesn't he? So he's gonna make mistakes. He's the kind of player that he'll often be a match winner, but he can also be the player that gives the ball away the most in games as well. But yeah, I thought we'll speak more about Broadhead, but that was a really nice finish from him as well, because it was whipped in at pace and he just sorted his feet out lovely. And then he looked like a different player after that. He just got confidence absolutely flowing through his veins, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I think as you say about him being a drifter, I think he's also very much a confidence player, isn't he? That if he gets a chance and puts it away in the first however many minutes, then you think, crikey, he's going to be on a bit of a roll here for the rest of the game. Whereas conversely, if he misses one or two, like he did at the Norwich game, he sort of just goes into his shell a little bit maybe. But a great goal all round. And having gone into the latter stages of the first half thinking, well, it'd be nice to just get a second goal here just to go in with a bit of comfort into half time, we find ourselves 3-0 up at half time and pretty much cruising. And Danny Rowell's got some decisions to make, whether to stick or twist, really, I suppose. And to a certain extent, I suppose he sticks, because he makes a couple of changes at half time, one of them including the aforementioned Barry Bannon. I'm not too how injured Mr. Bannon was, and I'm not sure how many times he's been taken off and substituted at half time for Sheffield Wednesday, but he comes off and they go to a 5-5 at the back from their previous four at the back. His performance in general, Dave, was Bannon, as you sort of you've referred to earlier from last year.
He was just schooled by Morsy and Luongo, did he? Honestly, I wouldn't.
They ran all over him, didn't they?
Absolutely destroyed him yesterday. Luongo was good yesterday. I mean, like I said, we'll get on to Morsy, but Luongo was back to his best, I thought, yesterday. You know, getting his foot in, you know, winning pretty much every second ball. And Bannon, you could see he was getting frustrated. I'm not sure he'd been booked.
Booked for trying to side man Hutchinson, didn't he?
Yeah, he should have done so. Got up and then maybe it's a smart move by Rowell there. You know, he's perhaps 3-0 down at half time. You know, yes, no doubt he is still a key player for them. 3-0 down at half time, they've got bigger, more important perhaps fights ahead of them, haven't they? You know, you almost write that game off and, you know, take him off at half time. I don't know. I haven't seen anywhere he's been, where he's injured or anything, but probably sheer frustration and stuff like that, I would have thought, because he was bossed.
Yeah, he just didn't. I couldn't work out what position he was playing. He just always seemed to be in the wrong place rather than the right place.
Yeah, that little tactical tweak, because normally they just play a system just to accommodate Bannon, don't they? And yesterday they shifted to something else and tried to play the ball down the channels a little bit more and sort of try and find those gaps, and it just didn't work for them at all. And yeah, I mean, he didn't have a good game. He just had one of those days where his touch wasn't quite there. But I don't think the way they set up helped him.
Yeah, and also his refereeing performance wasn't up to scratch either, was
not
it?
Really?
No.
Real shame. And it didn't take us too long, Mikey, into that second half pretty much straight away, Town's left hand side had been purring and did so again.
Yeah, well, this goal actually, it starts with Marvin Johnson who was linked with a move to us in January, wasn't he? Bombing down the left channel, and it sort of hits a cross shot, which sort of dipped at a really awkward height for Hladky, and Hladky just sort of swats it away, doesn't he? And I think because there was no Sheffield Wednesday players running into the box, it was a fairly safe move from him. And Davis is just so alert and just so keen to start a counter-attack. Like, so often we slowly build from the back, but when Davis gets the ball, it's a completely different matter, isn't it? He's just thinking straight away, how am I going to get up this line? And yeah, he starts the counter-attack. Broadhead drops in really deep, like a lot deeper than you'd usually see him. He exchanges passes with Davis. I think Luongo gets a touch as well, and Davis just flies up the left wing, and I think he's on the halfway line when he gets the ball off Luongo. So he's already covered, what, 40, 50 yards. And then, yeah, just plays a nice little pass inside to Broadhead, who's just kept running as well into sort of the centre of the left channel. Just a few sort of touches, and he sort of assesses, scans, looks what's going on, can see that Amari Hutchinson is making that run in off the right. And Hutchinson just first touch out of his feet, sort of bounces it up a little bit. I'm not sure if he meant to do that, but it bounced the ball up beautifully so he could just get his head over it and drill it with his right foot. He's got so much better at that finish with his right foot recently. He just powers it into the bottom corner. And it's, yeah, game, set and match.
Yeah, they were at sixes and sevens, weren't they, Dave? Straight after half time, considering they'd stuck an extra defender on the pitch. As Mikey says, when Broadhead started driving through their half, it just opened up, didn't it?
I think, in fairness to them, and I didn't notice this. Someone just said, sorry, I didn't misread too in the comments, that when Davis received the second ball halfway, when Mikey said he's bombing forward, that's when Pavida gets injured, apparently. So that's
he pulls up
at this stage. Yeah, so I guess that obviously, as you said, sorry, Nick, that obviously created the space, but it was still a lovely work goal. And he loves that ball broad, and he's great because it's not, it should be a straightforward ball, but he's got to get the weight right. Very similar to the ball he played first, Hurst at Sunderland, that little ball. So, yeah. Just a little 5-yard ball, perfectly weighted. And you know, Hutchinson's never going to miss, as he absolutely lashed it in, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beadle just wasn't about, was he?
No, he got a good hand to it, possibly. And yeah, so it was shortly after that Pavida was subbed, as Nick said there. He pulled up trying to track Leif Davis back, got subbed off for a few minutes later.
Sorry.
And then, yeah. Luongo, as Chaplin wasn't around, Luongo thought he'd have a go from the halfway line and try and stick it in. And he hit again, referring to my position in the ground. We were right behind that. And he sort of knuckleballed it, and it was wobbling as it headed towards goal and was just going wide when the Beadle tipped it wide. And then Moore had a couple of shots over the bar, and then Hutchinson had a shot which was deflected over the bar. As you were saying earlier, Jackson was starting to get into positions down the right and getting some decent balls in. And then we were in a position to be able to start making some changes. We spoke about at the beginning about making our attacking changes around about the 65th, 70th minute. And on 72, we make a double change. Sarmiento and Ali Alhamidi come on for Broadhead and Moore, giving the Welsh guys a bit of a break before they disappear off on international duty. And similar to Caden Jackson, what you want to do as a sub, and what the vast majority of our subs tend to do, is you want to sort of make an impact. And Ali Alhamidi does that, David, on 80 minutes.
He does, yeah. This is the turn from Hutchinson, which is just ridiculous. Again, I think it's, is it Hegway or someone from Firmino gets far too close to him. I think it's Wolfenden. It starts deep just in our box, but I think Wolfenden plays the ball into centre mid, and Hutchinson just drops his shoulder, and it's a real see you later, isn't it, really? It really is. He leaves him, absolutely. Drives on. He gets taken out, maybe by Johnson. Could have been Hegway, I'm not sure. But again, just delivers a ball left to Sarmiento. Great hit. Love that technique. Sort of rolls it under his boot, Mike. He gets it out of his feet. Lovely. It's a proper swerving, you know, it's really moving. Yeah, Beadle just sort of parries it. Can't really do much with it. That probably does well to stop it, to be fair. But yeah, Sharp, Alhamed, he's just right there on the spot and just absolutely slots it in. 5-0. Thank you very much. 5-0. You think, oh, this game's going to peter out into 4-0, which would have been, on the balance, though, it sounds crazy, slightly disappointing. But yeah, great to get the fifth.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a lull in proceedings midway through the second half, understandably. And as you say, Dave, and as Mick Mills was saying on the drive home, that very often you see that teams will get to four and then things will just tail off till the end of the season, and changes are made and subs are made, and the pattern of the game sort of lost a little bit, and everyone just settles for a 4-0. But no, not currently this team. And Alhamidi, a couple of minutes later, Mikey, as we sort of get towards the final minute of the game, he gets his second goal from a combined total of about 8 yards, do we think, for both of them?
Some boy, Alhamidi, he's so raw in so many aspects of his game, but he just knows where to be, doesn't he? And his movement is just fantastic. Just really, really good movement. It's like David McGoldrick-esque. We're running through a lot of our favourite ex-players in this show, aren't we?
All of them just yet, Mikey. Not all of them just yet.
you haven't played your trump card just yet, have you?
Not yet.
Back to the fifth goal, it was. I can't believe you didn't make the link between Jeremy stinging the hands of Beadle.
We've done that. Been there. We don't have milk it. We're going to milk it, Mikey. Okay. Look, leave him wanting more. Come on.
Okay. But yeah, let's talk about the sixth goal then. And yeah, Tuanzebe had a really, really solid game, didn't he? I find when Tuanzebe plays, we get a little bit more out of Leif Davis on the left side, maybe because he's got slightly more license to bomb forward. And Tuanzebe's a different prospect to Clark because he doesn't hurtle down the right wing, but he can be quite composed on the ball in that position. Maybe a little bit of a hybrid between Clark and Danasien in some ways. When he's poor, he's pretty poor, but when he's good, he's really good, isn't he? And he's very good off the ball, and at times he's pretty good on it as well. But yeah, he's playing in slippers by this stage, just so calm in possession. Amari is playing out on the right at this time, and he runs inside from the channel and just takes the ball in his stride like he did all game. And he's just one of those players that just seems to be running faster when he's got the ball than when he hasn't. It's incredible. He just picks up speed. He chops outside the Wednesday defender, and rather than, like he possibly would have done earlier on in the season, latched at it with his right foot from the tight angle, he just knows that Ali Alhamidi is going to be there, and he just rolls it across, and Alhamidi basically just nonchalantly just lets the ball hit him. It was such a perfect cutback.
I'm convinced at some point this season we're going to get a goal where Hutchinson's going to square it like that. And Hamidi's going to put his foot on the ball, get on his knees, and give it one of those over the line from like a yard. I'm convinced he will.
Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he? So calm. He kind of comes across as a player that wouldn't be calm because he's so sort of busy and quick, isn't he? And normally players like that can be a little bit snatchy, but he doesn't seem to be that.
That was quite funny, the sixth. He sort of barely made it over the line, didn't he? It was only for about a yard, but that bit of skill when he chops, when he chops Johnson, Hutchinson, just superb, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
And as been said, and it was spoken about in the Telegram chats over the last day or so, as a 19-year-old to have two goals and in that position in the box to still think, do you know what? And it's something we've spoken about previously on the pod, is once his decision-making starts catching up with his ability, then you're going to have a hell of a player on your hands here. And just to show that level of maturity and calmness to know that Alhamidi's there and he got a better chance to score was just, just fantastic to see, wasn't it? And as you say about Tuanzebe, Mikey, there was a couple of times in that second half, wasn't there, when he was starting to ping balls down to Jackson, wasn't there? He was starting to get a little bit of understanding, and he was getting a bit more confidence in the way he was playing, in his own performance by playing these first-time balls down the right-hand side, which hopefully will only be sits in good stead for the remainder of the games if Burns isn't around.
Well, also summed it up, someone in the chat just mentioned there, that block by Burgess. I think it was
4-0.
I'm sure it was 4 by then. It was, yeah. I don't think it was 5, but just putting his body on the line, you know, so determined to keep that clean sheet. Absolutely superb. That sort of summed it up, really.
Yeah, that was Rob. Yeah, I did mean to mention that, because that was a hell of a block. And as was mentioned, I listened back on watched the commentary again this morning, and that was mentioned there. I think Ian Westlake said that, you know, he could well be as, if not more, pleased with that block than he would have been with his own goal. Yeah, he's that kind of player. So that was all she wrote. 6-0. Thank you very much. The stats pretty much tell the tale. I've put them on the screen here for those who are listening on podcasts. 57% possession, 20 shots, 10 of those on target to the one of Sheffield Wednesday, which was Quincy Jones's favourite Colombian, Ian Pavida's shot in the first half. It was as comfortable and all-round performance as we've seen for a while. Kieran McKenna himself said post-match that he enjoyed watching us. Are you enjoying watching us, Mikey, at the moment?
No, it's getting boring now, isn't it, really? I'm kind of missing the old days. No, it's just incredible, isn't it? I was with a group of my old schoolmates yesterday, and we had a Manchester United fan amongst us. But to be fair to him, he is from, he does live in Fleet. So
Guildford.
Make perfect sense. Yeah, he's lived in Guildford as well. So he's sort of, he's ticking off all of the Manchester United hotspots. But yeah, he said it was the best performance that he'd seen all season. That might have changed after today, Manchester United getting through in the FA Cup. But yeah, he said he was really impressed, and he thinks that if we played like that in the division above, we'd be more than good enough to compete. My niece predicted that we'd win 5-0. I don't know how, she's 6 years old. I don't know how much Sheffield Wednesday she's been watching, but obviously a lot more than the rest of us, because she saw this outcome coming. But yeah, just an absolute pleasure, a different type of enjoyment. Yesterday, wasn't it? There was no jeopardy really at any point. But there was obviously a big crowd. Sheffield Wednesday fans were pretty impressive, weren't they? And that always adds an extra bit of spice
always
to the
are.
Game. And just thoroughly enjoyable. Just everyone walking out with just beaming smiles, and all of the pubs were absolutely packed out after the game as well, which is always nice.
Take your word for that, Mikey. And you say about us potentially being able to, you know, make the step up and play a similar style and be not quite as successful, but, you know, do fight our own quarter if we should go up. Funnily enough, I was reading some more stats out. Read some more stats during the day today, and about we average more goals in the Championship so far than we did in last year in League One, I think, by virtue of 0.18 per goals per game or something along those lines. Certainly at home, in any case.
Yeah. More teams come and have a go, though, don't they?
Like even Sheffield
Wednesday, they're in the bottom three, but they set up to try and score more goals than us yesterday, didn't they? And that can open up these opportunities. But problem is, a lot of the games we've had to score 3 or 4 to win.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you're getting value for money for your season tickets. I remember that when you get the email from Mark Ashton in the next couple of weeks advising you of the, what I'm sure may be a slight increase. Please do get your questions in. The guys, we're going to have a little chat more about the game, as you can probably understand. But no, please get your questions in. We'll have a quick look through the tables and results from yesterday. Very quick look through those. Before we do, a quick note from our sponsor, Innovation Labs.
Innovation Labs, providing co-working and innovation hubs across East Anglia. We're the perfect place for remote workers, freelancers, startups, or innovators to do business. Our unique member network creates extensive business development and collaboration opportunities. Hot desks are available from £20 a day or £99 per month, with business coaching also available from £50. Innovation Labs, turning your ideas into multi-million pound businesses. Located in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, with new sites in Thetford, Norwich and Kuala Lumpur opening soon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
So yeah, a quick couple of plugs. Despite it being International Week, there is still plenty going on in the Blue Monday world. Tuesday of this week, we will be releasing a show which Rich is interviewing our friend Nick Ames from Guardian Sport, the journalist from Guardian Sport, who's also a friend of the pod and is also a Telegram subscriber, no less. That will be Tuesday. And then running up to next weekend, where the women's team are obviously playing at Portman Road on Saturday, Rich and Seb will be performing their normal Thursday pre-match show. I believe it's pre-recorded, but they'll be performing their normal pre-match show, but with a slight twist, because it will be highlighting the women's game against Chatham on Saturday. There's also an interview with a couple of the players on Thursday, so that's coming up. And then on Sunday, as I said at the beginning, we'll be back as normal, despite there being no men's senior game to speak of. We'll be back on Sunday evening, 8 o'clock in the normal time, to chat about Ipswich and then probably a few questions and bits and pieces, and also looking forward to the Easter games and on from there, really. Well, people, I can see lots of questions. Thank you very much, everyone, for getting your questions in. I've just got a couple of questions for you guys here, actually. And it may be that they're covered from the people's questions as well coming in. Apologies if they are. But individually, I just want to highlight a couple of people from yesterday. Dave, you talked about him a bit earlier and referenced Paul Mariner. Kiefer Moore, despite not scoring yesterday, was still pretty instrumental in that performance, wasn't he?
Yeah, he deserved the goal, didn't he? He was very, very good. Just his general hold-up play and, just slotted in superbly well, hasn't he? Our memories are our memories of him from that early spell at the club were somewhat not quite so positive, but he's just an all-round, you can just see, just an all-round quality player now, you know, strong, still playing with the bandage from obviously from last week, his war wound from last week. It's just a shame. He absolutely deserved a goal, but yeah, fantastic performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mikey, one of the questions is here about Amari. I'll pop up here. Rodney's asking about the role, or once Chaplin's back, what does McKenna do with regards to Hutchinson, given Hutchinson's performances? His improvement over the actual visible, tangible improvement, you can see game upon game upon game how much better the guy's getting. It's testament to him and it's testament to the coaching staff. But you know, from your perspective, how integral is he becoming and how far can he go generally within the world of football?
Well, he's crucial, isn't he? He's just got a little bit of X factor, hasn't he? And not only is he quick and a good dribbler, he also has fantastic technique. He's probably one of the best finishers, if not the best finisher at the club. An impact player in many ways. He maybe isn't a perfect 90-minute player, but he works so hard off the ball as well. The amount of time...
He does, doesn't he, now?
Just causing issues for the opposition. And I just like how when he does play out on the wing, if just from a standing start, he can just create something that whenever he's sort of involved in the final third, something happens, doesn't it? He just gets you off the edge of your seat, and yeah, he just looks every part the modern day winger. I could definitely see him having a decent career in the Premier League. I don't know if he'll quite make it up to the elite level, Champions League level, but if he carries on improving and he has a manager like Kieran McKenna, not many of those about, he's got every chance, hasn't he? And he's moved about quite a bit already in his short career, in his youth career. So I think if we get promoted, I think there's every chance we might be able to get him for another season next year. And then who knows?
Yeah, and he's moving about a fair bit on the pitch, playing in lots of different positions and different roles.
Yeah, and I think going back to that question from the chat, I think because of Wes Burns' injury, there's probably a good chance that he starts on the right wing, or maybe we do see a bit more of Caden Jackson playing in that right wing role. He's played pretty well for McKenna in that position before. And then maybe Hutchinson moves out to the right when Chaplin comes up for Sarmiento or whatever. It'll be interesting to see, because Chaplin, while he hasn't consistently put in fantastic performances recently, he still affects games with goals and assists, doesn't he? And he's a leader in the team.
Yeah.
I fully expect to see him come back in as soon as he's available. But I love seeing Hutchinson in that number 10 role, but he's also a fantastic player to have out wide as well.
Yeah, they're different types of players, aren't they, Dave? That one's a dribbler, one's, as again, referencing Mick Mills on the radio, he was saying that Chapman's more of a 2-3 touch player, whereas Hutchinson's more of a dribbler. But I just want to refer to a different player who's also making tangible, or has certainly since he joined the club, tangible improvements, is the captain. Can you give us a good half an hour on
mate, honestly, Stan Morsey? It's just incredible. You think, you know, it's just the levels he's achieved, but the levels he maintains week in, week out, is just incredible. Yeah, I thought Bristol City, I thought he carried us through that game. I thought Morsey's second half against Bristol City, I thought might have been the best I've seen yet of him, to be fair. But yesterday he was just on a completely different level, wasn't he? Helped by, no doubt, by Luongo coming back to, you know, his top form, I thought. But he's just superb. And I had a really, a heart back, you know, old fart, but heart back to, like I was mentioning, Kiefer Moore and Paul Mariner. Speaking to Colin, who was sitting next to me, Colin Robinson, Chris Robinson, and Chris was saying, Joe reminds me of Dave. He said, go on. He said, Franz Tyson. I said, I kind of get what you mean. He sort of gets the ball and is able to manipulate the ball sort of tight, quite a tight turning circle, and manipulate the ball and come out of trouble. Obviously, he's far more, all rounded midfielder than Franz Tyson. I don't mean that, but he's far more, you know, more of a combative midfielder. Mm. You know, he's almost a complete, he's not a 30, 40 yard sweeping passer of a ball, but just the levels he maintains and the levels he continues to achieve are just incredible for me. Absolutely incredible. And yeah, when he plays like that, like we said about Bannon and the rest of their midfield, they're just chasing shadows, but just clever, isn't he? And you look, I watched him yesterday. I had a better vantage point than I usually do. You watch him yesterday and you just watch him. He's always mark of a good footballer, you know, always on the half turn, always looking over his shoulder to receive those little balls. So when he receives those little balls, be it from Gladke or perhaps from Twanzabi in tight and that, he's always just got so much time and to play the ball, just never seems to get into trouble, you know. And yesterday, just every second ball, him and Luongo just gobbled up, didn't they? It was just, yeah, relentless, really. But yeah, he again, last season he was fantastic, but this season, yeah, as I said yesterday, we all said yesterday, just such a shame he's not 5 years younger, two or three years even.
But to my eyes, it's just remarkable that, yeah, he can't be. He's got to be a much, much better player than the one that we thought we were all signing down in League One, isn't it? You know, the improvements that he's made himself. Because when he joined and he was partnered with Lee Evans, he was playing the more advanced role and having to get into the box, wasn't he? Breaking into the box. Yeah. No, that's right. But now, as you say, it's every week, isn't it?
A week in, but again, like Hutchinson, this is not testament to the coaching and everything that's going on down there. He's just... He is some player, and yesterday he was. I thought it was his best yet yesterday.
Yeah, Yeah,
Craig, there was a good comment in the chat from Paul Saunders saying that Morsy was incredible during Ramadan last season. Yes. It's almost
like he
raised his game and he was at another level yesterday. Wondering if we'll see the same this year. And yeah, there could be something in that. They do say that. I think Morsy's spoken about that before, how he feels sort of more inspired and
emboldened.
There's even a little bit of science in having the diet that way as well, and it clearly seems to get the best out in him. Just what a fantastic signing, what a fantastic player, and just absolute leader as well.
And I remember someone just said there's someone just said in the on the chat there, you know, we have to not begrudgingly have to thank Paul Cook for that, because that was his relationship, really, wasn't it, that got him there. And he said after that, I think was his first game after that Bolton, was it 5-2? And I think I remember Cook saying then post match saying, "Sammy Morsy plays, that doesn't happen." And he's probably been proved right.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes just talking, because it's such a level, and the thing is, it's just the consistency, isn't it? It's not a one every two or three games. It's just the consistency, and sometimes with such consistency, it just gets forgotten about or thought that it's just taken as read that it's going to happen each game, doesn't it? But it's just there's such a high level of performance all the time.
Hutchison was deservedly man of the match yesterday, although quite funny when the sixth goal went in that Mark Murphy thought he was so good that he could chase after his own ball across the 6-yard box and score off his own pass, which I thought was pretty impressive. But you know, you can, again, the Hutchison, because he had just so fantastic with his assists and goals yesterday. But other than that, Morsy was, again, head and shoulders above everyone else, wasn't he? Mm.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah, 100%. Right, we'll have a very, very, very quick look at the bits and pieces from the other results from yesterday, and also one insignificant one from today. Anything that crops up from here, you guys, Swansea beat Cardiff pretty comfortably from what I saw in the fan zone in the South Wales Derby. Birmingham City, this is not looking good. I spoke about it with Ben last week and asked him if Venus was going to get Birmingham City relegated. Well, he's doing a pretty good job of it at the moment. 1-0 loss at home to Watford is not great. Although saying that, Plymouth also lost this time at home to Preston. I don't think there's many Plymouth fans particularly happy with the management team down there at the moment. Rotherham 0-0, Huddersfield, Stoke stinking the place out at home to Norwich. Sunderland just treading water towards the summer yet again, 0-0 against QPR, and West Brom again pretty comfortably beating Bristol City at home. Anything that crops up there, I say, just down the bottom is I'll pop the table up just down the bottom. Last week everyone sort of won or picked up a point here and there, but this week Birmingham, Stoke and Plymouth all lost, and none of Huddersfield, QPR or Blackburn managed to win.
Yeah, it was quite funny. That I didn't notice, Scott, but I guessed it was someone like that, because when it went to 6-0, the Sheffield Wednesday fans started singing about staying up. So I assume that the other results are pretty much gone their way. And you'd think with Sheffield Wednesday down at the bottom, they probably see the last two games, Leeds at home, us away, as two free hits, as I said earlier, probably.
Yeah.
But they'll have to improve a little bit, I think, on yesterday to have any chance, I would have thought.
But six teams covered by 3 points there is...
Plymouth aren't out. Plymouth are out close, aren't they? They're certainly not out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Leicester lost today, as a couple of people are pointing out as well. That was probably quite a mentally exhausting game for everyone involved at Leicester. Played a lot of that game with 10 men against Chelsea and, conceded two more late goals. I know it's against Premier League opposition, but losing is a habit, and it's definitely one that Leicester seem to have at the moment, and long may that continue.
And I guess the other thing we should mention is the upcoming Coventry game. Wouldn't that be absolutely beautiful if it was like 3 days before the cup semi-final and perhaps they're slightly out of the playoff picture as well? That'd be delightful.
Mikey, assuming Burns is out, I think we can pretty much assume Burns is out for a few weeks at least. It's a tricky one, isn't it? How do we line up on the right? Do we entrust Caden Jackson with a star, or if we assume Chaplin's going to be back in two weeks' time, do we just rejig that back, that three?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to know, isn't it? But it looks like Tuanzebe and Jackson could be a good partnership down that right side. They seem to suit playing down there, didn't they? And yeah, I think maybe Chaplin comes back and possibly starts from the bench, and we could see Jackson starting down the right and Hutchinson in the middle. I'm not sure if we've seen Amari play in the number 10 position much away from home, but yeah, it will be an interesting one, that one. But I mean, I don't want to say it, but a lot can change between now and then. We've got Broadhead and Moore playing in internationals, haven't we? And there could be a training ground injury here or there, or somebody has a fantastic week on the training ground and earns the shirt. But yeah, I think it feels like Caden Jackson probably does deserve a start in that right wing role, and then we can keep Hutchinson in the number 10 with Chaplin probably coming on for the final half an hour or so.
But yeah, I suppose we've got the opportunity. It's horses for courses. It depends who we're up against, what their left back's like, you know, how they play, etc. That some games are get the ball into Amari Hutchinson's feet and let him dribble. Some games are get the ball in behind the left back and let Caden Jackson or Wes Burns run onto it, aren't they? You know, I suppose it's nice to have, as Jackson proved yesterday, it's nice to have someone in who's in form who can slot in as when needed. It's a lovely position to be in. Along similar lines, Rodney's asking the question here, given Hutchinson's performance in the number 10, what does McKenna do when Chaplin comes back? I think Mikey sort of covered that. I suppose it just takes the stress out of having to rush him back if he's not fully fit with his back issues, I suppose. I'm going to welcome you back, Dave, with a question from Norman. Those up the road seem to have found some form. Would you take a point right now against them in 2 or 3 weeks' time?
No, because it'd still be unbearable. If we only got a point, it would still be unbearable, wouldn't it? So, no, I won't be prepared to settle for less than 3. No. It was bad enough. It was bad enough. You know, I did venture onto one of their sites after the draw back in December, and that was like, it was just hard to take that. So no. First of all, don't lose the game, but no. Let's go there and win. Good God, yeah. Got to change sometime, surely. Has to.
Yeah, let's hope so. And as sort of Neil says here, thoughts on £40 a ticket. And it's not necessarily that, Neil. I'm hoping to jump on at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and get a couple. The kids' tickets, over 12s, under 18s, whatever. It's about 23, 25 quid for a 13-year-old to go and watch, which I think's...
How many points have you got, Craig?
Taking the mickey. Roughly. 37.
Yes,
more than Sheffield Wednesday, haven't you, Craig?
Was speaking to someone last week who's got 39, and that is more than Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, what I'd say on it, Craig, I think it comes down to the fact that that's possibly how much a ticket is in that area of the ground. I don't think you can charge away fans more than you charge the home fans.
No.
And I've paid more than that for a Carrow Road East Anglian derby years ago. It got up to well over 40 quid at one point. That might have been for the playoff game. But it's tit for tat, isn't it? We give them 2,000, they give us 2,000. And just silliness, really. Probably won't be any beer available in the bar either. We won't be treated particularly well when we're down there. But if we get the result, I don't think anyone will care too much, will they?
No, exactly. Get there, get 3 points, and then
get out of Dodge.
Yeah,
get absolutely. Out of Dodge, exactly.
One for you, Mikey, from Lee. If both were fully fit, who would you play between Hurst and Moore if we were condemned to the playoffs?
Well, that is quite a big if, isn't it? Because if Hurst is back, he's not going to be fully match fit, is he? But I guess if it's a hypothetical question, I feel like it. Unbelievably, I can't believe that I'm going against George Hurst here, but yeah, it probably would be Kiefer Francisco. What is it?
Kiefer Sutherland, Dudley Moore.
Okay, lovely. I think it would be Kiefer Moore, just because the aerial presence in both boxes, he can link the play.
Yeah,
and we don't massively miss Hurst's sort of running power because of the running power that we can get around Moore. It definitely was strengthen us, but then it would be a shame that we wouldn't see Al Hamady off the bench, would we?
Well, you say that. I don't think we're shy about filling our bench up with attacking options, are we? And that's one thing that surprised me a little bit. I know Dave were waxing lyrical about Keith Moore. He's no slouch either, is he?
He gets around. He's pretty mobile. Gets around. Do you know what? I wouldn't put it past our manager to get to the playoff final when Hurst is fit and go 4-4-2. We'd do two big guys up front. Bring it on.
Mixer. Just stick it in the mixer.
Yeah.
That's McKenna ball all over, isn't it? just quitting here. Another one here for you, Dave. I'll stick a couple more on and then we'll go and enjoy our Sunday evenings. One from Jack. With Clark and Burns' link-up play now gone for a while, will we see Axel as the primary right-back to help cover the defensive work of Jackson or Hutchinson? Yeah, or is it going to be a bit of tit-for-tat, like-for-like?
I think so. Horses for courses, a bit like I think how Jackson, perhaps Hutchinson, if Burns is out long term now, how I think Jackson and Hutchinson would manage. So I think, yeah, you'll probably see Clark and Twan Zabi handled the same for specific games, I would have thought.
Yeah. And again,
probably
as I was saying,
Clark in the Tuesday night games and the East Anglian derby, I reckon.
Maybe right. Yeah.
On here, Mikey, for you. From A, if Southampton are already condemned to playoffs, would you take points off Leeds if that could drag them into playoffs? Would they take points off Leeds?
Yeah, it's a frustrating one, really, isn't it? Because we obviously need to stay above Southampton, but we don't want them to be out of it because they've got everyone to play, haven't they? And they could make a big difference. But I think even if Southampton don't have points to play for, I don't necessarily think that would change them too much. Obviously the personnel might change and they might rest a couple of players, but they'll play in exactly the same style of playing and they'll definitely create chances against teams that are desperately trying to win. So yeah, I think we kind of want them to stay alive for as long as possible, but maybe we finish them off.
If you covered this during my sort of outtake a few minutes ago, but haven't they got to play something like 10 games in 26 days or something? Yeah. So it's a hell of a they got a hell of a workload ahead of them. So
it's a tricky one's in there as well. But is anyone looking forward to, you know, playoff games aren't enjoyable particularly. Games against Norwich aren't particularly enjoyable. Yeah, add them both together and you've got a particularly unenjoyable couple of games coming
up. Someone said, just imagine if it happened and it was the final, how the hell would that get managed?
Well, yes.
Transport, logistics wise, for Christ's sake, how would that work?
Well, I think Norfolk and Suffolk Police would probably get together, Dave, and just arrange it so Norwich get the trains from Norwich Station, probably charter straight through to Wembley and we can walk down there.
Leave it
but
up to
we'll
the big brains.
All the way back when we win.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, we'll float back.
Brilliant stuff. All right, I think that'll do us. We've just squeezed over the hour mark. I'll get my knuckles wrapped by Rich for that, but not to worry. We're allowed to every now and again. A couple of minutes or an extra couple of goals. Thank you, guys. Thank you for your time. Thank you, Mikey, for your appearance on a Sunday night, which is always good to see. Dave, as ever, thank you very much. As I said, this week, we've still got plenty going on. Tuesday, our pod interview with Nick, and then Thursday pre-match, and we're back again Sunday for 8 o'clock flagship, as ever. Thank you very much to everyone who's been in the chat. Really appreciate it. It's been absolutely outstanding. Loads of comments, loads of chat going on while we've been discussing yesterday's thrilling win. Thank you very much for watching. This is the Blue Monday podcast. And as I say, we'll see you at some point during the week. Cheers all.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.